And I'm really happy and excited that I can today welcome Heidi Guttekunst from Helsinki to our Conscious Evolution Summit. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you so much. It's very nice to be here.
Yeah, and Heidi, before you share about your experiences bringing consciousness into organizations, I would like to give just a very short introduction about you and what you do. So, Heidi, you are the co-founder of a social enterprise, Amara Collaboration. And with this enterprise, you really have this purpose to double the number of worldwide transformative leaders and to bring more consciousness into organizations in order to really shift consciousness in the world. And with that, also bringing more success and awareness into organizations, as well as effective leadership and also engage people because it needs us. I mean, organizations and structures are only alive when we fully participate with what deeply matters to us. And I'm so curious to hear from you, maybe what touched you so that you bring all your engagement into organizations? How does this did this start?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It actually started a long time ago, and I think I don't remember exactly when we met, but I know we met some maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And at that time, I was still I was working as a CEO in a digital advertising agency or digital service design agency, actually. And that was what actually sparked me to do something different. Because what happened in that organization was that I came into a quite broken organization. I mean, it was functioning but people were not very engaged, and it was three companies put together, and people were leaving, it was doing losses, and they didn't have a leader for a while. And so I took that on, and in quite a short time, we actually turned this around. And it was, I mean, that was like, there was one part of it of actually seeing something really transform in the organization. And I didn't actually put that much attention to it at the beginning. So it was just like, well, things are changing and we're doing really good. That's great. And people are engaged and people are much happier coming to work. But it was actually when I was in a conference in Canada and I was telling the story that I was so enthusiastic about that then my now colleague, co-founder Bill Torbert, he was sitting in the same table and he was saying, listen to my story. He comes up to me afterwards and he's like, do you have any idea how rare it is to lead a transformation you have just described? And I said, no, I mean, I don't even know the word transformation. It's just that I've been going in and doing what feels right, even though it sometimes felt really funny, but like intuitively what felt was to be done at that moment. And so that's how I learned about how I function myself. So he's been researching stages of development, stages of adult development, and actually how that relates to then being capable of leading transformations. Because, and it has to do with if you're able to actually lead transformations in yourself, then you can do it for groups and then eventually also for organizations I mean, of course, it's not the only parameter. You need to be quite skilled in other ways to be your leaders as well. But it's one of the things that is not has been paid attention to a lot. And yet at this day, it's something that often is missing from the development of leaders and organizations. And this really, really inspired me. And I'd already felt that I do want to do something else than being in advertising, which I had been for about 10 years. And I felt I didn't follow, I wasn't really living according to my integrity because on the one hand, I was kind of judging the fact, and I still think we're producing a lot of things that we don't need in the world. Like a lot of things that it's just we create a need for and then people think they need it and buy. And as we all know, we use too much resources at the time. And And that was, and I felt like through leading this organization and helping companies sell more of the stuff that I didn't believe we need more of. And of course, there were also things that we do need more of. But some of those, I felt really in a conflicted place. And so I wanted not to continue with this. And so this is, it's a long, long story with a lot of kind of magical turns and coincidences that actually then led to me, Bill Thorberg, Jane Allen, and Irena from Lithuania to actually found Amara. And I'll give a little more, which is that I was thinking about, well, my purpose, or it's not maybe the purpose, but what I want to put my attention and engagement to in this life is actually to make some kind of change. And one part, and I think still feel maybe that the most effective way is actually do that to children, and how we're helping children to grow and see the world in a different way, not such a normative way. Also that, but to in addition, help them actually bring more of their creativity. But that's not where I have my expertise. So the kind of the second most choice is actually through leaders, because leaders have such a big impact through all of the people they're impacting. And that also has so much to do in the well-being of people in the world, as we use so much time in our work. So that's why we wanted to, and I was kind of the initiator of Amara, and we were all four co-founders, was like, well, this is where I want to place my attention. This is what I want to serve. And this is what I believe in, that if we actually even make small shifts, and if we have just a few more people who are capable of making the workplaces more sustainable in many ways, that has a ripple effect on so many things in the world.
Thank you for sharing that and giving us kind of a bit of a context of who you are and what you do and why you do what you do. And I agree kind of very much in some things you shared. And what I also kind of noticed when I was listening to you, Heidi, is that in a way you seem to have kind of a natural capacity to be in a leadership role. And what I just noticed in myself and also with other people, if you have a certain capacity and you wouldn't use it, it's kind of, you feel like a, let's say like a racehorse just put in a little stable, and you just sense that you are meant to be for something more, for something bigger. And it's not kind of not putting hierarchies or making something wrong, but I really believe that what we are meant to share and what we are meant to engage, we really fully need to express it. And I just would like to hear a bit from your experience working with people, because I just assume that you met people which had this also naturally in a way, and maybe just needed some pushes or a bit more skill set to really share it effectively.
Yeah, you mean you're talking about like leadership, that as leadership of being on a more natural way of being, and yeah, well, it's a quite wide topic, and I don't quite know where to start talking about it. But to start with, if you say that, or what is the playground we want to, because somehow this is, in some ways, I feel a lot of things are serious, and I sometimes feel a big sadness about things that are happening in the world, and then on the other hand, at the same time, it's kind of a little big play, and it's a like, what is it we want to do that when we're living here, while we're living here, and what is the way in which we want to do it? So I think that is, and what is the area, like what is the playground? And that's why I call it kind of a playground, because where is it that I want to enter, and what is it, and how, what game do I want to play, and how do I want to play that game? And in that sense, I you know, it resonates with the whole thing of what is the impact that I want to make. And for me, it feels like for me, the playground is more of the globe than it is just, for example, Finland. So I'm like more like multicultural than unicultural. And that you were describing as a racehorse putting into a little cage. And I can know that sometimes if I stay too long, for example, in Finland, I can start feeling like, I need to get out, and I feel put into a too small space. And it, yeah, which in itself, it's like, well, it would be, of course, nice not to have that feeling and be able to just be with it. But I sense that in me. But as for other people, it's oftentimes, this is, I think like one part of our work is coaching, but it's only a very small part of it. So the one-to-one work, that it often goes quite deep into our assumptions and into our stories and unconscious stories that we're telling ourselves. And I think a lot of the times coaching is looked at something like performance coaching, where there is a push and yes, there is a push, but I think that how I'd like to look at it is more of a receptive thing, and I'm actually creating a space where people then realize their own potential. And so and sometimes it's a push, and there's many times that I've seen these shifts in people when it's like one day something that's been there all the time, it's like waking up and like stepping out of the door and being like, oh, all of this is here and I never saw it. And that's like, that is so rewarding moments. And I'm thinking like one of my favorite topics is actually women and female leadership. And one of my beliefs is that at this time of this time in life, we're like going towards more feminine power and going away from the patriarchal kind of world that has been for such a long time, into not the complete opposite, but still have women needing to take more leadership positions. And here I have a story which is which I really like myself, which has to do with power and female power. And it was an organization I was working with, and there were only a few women and most more men with the group I work with. And one of the women was saying, oh, you know, the gender balance is not all right in this group of people. And the two other women were saying, no, what are you talking about? I mean, we are always treated equally, and when we recruit people, we recruit them equally, and you know, there's nothing here, what are you talking about? And kind of putting her into the feminist corner because of that. And then one of these two other women I had then worked with for maybe 2 years, and then one day she's sitting there with me in the room and she's saying, oh my God, now I see it. It's always been there. I see the different use of masculine and feminine power and how it actually does play in every day. And so I think that that's a beautiful example of a like very subtle thing that most people pay no attention to whatsoever. But because of the development that we've been doing, she suddenly saw this. And she suddenly then was able to actually, in her own leadership, take this into account and pay attention to things that she wanted to pay attention to. And for me, those are kind of big moments, because it's like the moments when people start reinventing, or it's not reinventing, but it's like looking again at the assumptions and the beliefs that we have and creating completely new beliefs and integrating them in themselves. And so you know, it's easy to look at, oh, I coached someone and then they became took the next role, and that's of course nice, but the actual big breakthroughs are often the very small ones, I think, because they're very small but actually have quite a big impact in the whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just reminds me, because I just had yesterday a conversation with John de Ruyter, a spiritual pioneer and teacher from Canada, and he really also emphasizes we really needing to be kind of very fine in ourselves, looking at the subtlety, because the where it becomes more true and more real and more relevant, it's often more in the subtlety than in the obvious. So I really like you sharing this example. And then this has basically impact on all different contexts in our life. So, yeah. And Heidi, kind of, I would like to know how does it look like you offering your support in helping organizations to transform? How would that look like?
Right. Well, I can bring just one example that we're working with at the moment, which is an organization of 10,000 people and in 8 countries. And we have been working, we're working like at the same time on many, many levels. And it's only, it's me and my colleague and some other people coming in. So we're maybe a team about 5 to 6 people, mostly women, actually almost solely women. But, and we have been going into the different, countries, work with the management teams, and, what we do, like, so I can maybe give them a little bit more of a context. So first we work with the management teams we have so far been working in 2 countries, and we could just go about to start in 2 other countries, and with one function, the HR function, and also from the top, looking at the whole. So looking at the system, from the top management. And so this is the kind of the context, and then we're going into more and more places. And we work always on 3 levels. So we work on the individual, so kind of the first person level. We work on the we, in the we space, so I space and the we space, and then also the it, or the third person, the organization, which often then connects to the outer world and to the system. So we always keep those 3 perspectives. And we come in with listening. So really listening into, well, what's going on? Where are the people? So where are they at? And really respecting where people are at. Like going into the individual and looking also at the collective level, but looking at where are people and what is the context in which they actually function. And so the first, as we start working with them, is really only listening in, of course. And we work a lot with the dynamic of the group. And so we always start with working with the group, with the top management, for example, with a country. So we work with the manager and then the group. And we see like where they're coming from, where they are at, and where they're going. And from there, start to look at, well, what is the needs that these people in this context need, where they are at. And often when looking at transformation, and transformation is not a great word. I mean, we use it, but it's not a great word because it's an overused word. It's like your digital transformation, and every change companies do today, they want to call transformation, but actually transformation changes the shape or changes into something new. So it is an evolution, the change that we talk about as we talk about transformation. And these kind of transformation, they happen from the individual and of course also in the collective. But that's because they also go quite much from the individual as we see it. We look at like who are the people who, if they get a little bit more support, if they get a little bit more of a thinking space, if they start inquiring, which is a lot what we work about, it's an inquiry coming with the assumption that people know more than they think they know. So it's not serving all of the answers. And this is something we're often also blamed for doing. It's like, why do you always ask so many questions? Why you're supposed to have all the answers? It's like, well, no, actually not. Because if we're coming from the outside giving the answers, it's not going to help the organization. But if we help them with the question that they're going to find the answers, that's how they can go forward. And it's not like the organizations need to be dependent on someone coming from the outside. And so that's why we work a lot with inquiry and something we call action inquiry. So
can I just ask a question in between?
Yes, of course.
Would that kind of, when I listen to that, the impression I get is as if you kind of would really relate already kind of to the potential of a person or of this group more than, I mean, acknowledging where they are, but you really relate a lot to their potential. Is that right? That the impression?
Yeah, to the potential and to the idea that we actually have a lot of wisdom. So if we're looking at the traditional teaching, which I personally had a difficult time with in school, that is coming with the assumption that I know and you don't know, so I need to tell you. Whereas when this idea is more that actually you do know, and I'm just, my role is only helping you to actually find out and maybe serve something that is then helping finding out. Yeah, so it's a bit of a flipped way. And of course, sometimes ideas are really helpful, but that's not the starting point. And they're only there to help actually inquire and help putting into your own context, helping putting into your, like where you are, rather than trying to force any model into like, how does this fit into your, so in that sense, it's coming from a different place of looking at the potential and.
Yeah, and what I just also notice is really this notion of empowering people. Really, if you relate to that, what they already know, and you trust in their wisdom and their knowledge, and that's really empowering for individuals. And I also, because as you mentioned in the beginning, also being with children, I mean, I supported two girls growing up, and this I noticed as very helpful in relating to them in the way you just described how you would do it in organizations. So it doesn't matter if we have younger people or older people, relating in that way is always very supportive.
Yeah, it's the idea that we're all humans, and that's something that has somehow in organizations been put, I think, through the industrial age, that people are just something that you can replace with something, someone else, if they kind of break. So it's kind of taking out the human part of it, and there's still the shadow of that left, mm-hmm. often in the way of relating and looking like in the hierarchical way, mm-hmm. Rather than really being looking at the human and being humble. And something that I feel like not a part of also being forgiving or imperfectness, and because that's beautiful and that's what makes us human, that we actually do, we're not perfect, and that's fine. And oftentimes the notion of being forgiving of that isn't there, but there's like more judgment than forgiving in organizations. And so those are like really small switches, but they make a huge impact, as you say, for children, but for anyone. We all have those fundamental needs to be seen and cared for.
And Heidi, I just wonder, would that also then mean, because I observed also quite often that where if things are not working really smoothly and people are kind of worried in the companies, often it has to do with relationship issues, with conflicts in the team, in the organization. I mean, do you share this experience? My first question. And the second is, In your experience, do we need to put more energy and give more space to building relationships in organizations?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the things is actually relationships in any context. It's about relationships and relating to other people, relating to yourself and relating to your work. And conflict, I think like conflict is not a bad thing. Sometimes it's seen as a bad thing. It's not a bad thing if there is ways in which to actually deal with that conflict, and ways to bring it forward, because usually it then can then, of course, it can lead to a big breakup, but it also might lead to a deeper relationship and more trust in the end. So yes, I think there is a lot, like the problems is that when the conflicts are played out, but they're never dealt with, or the conflicts are done in ways that is done behind people's back, and it's kind of playing the game, and when people use so much energy in playing the game to, for example, get the next level and climb the ladder, rather than actually doing the work, when it becomes a real problem. So yes, I think I see quite a bit of that, and also as for, because of there, we have for such a long time, we have just tried to put more, making it more efficient and efficient. So run faster and faster and faster. Which means people become more stressed. And when they become more stressed, they more easily become reactive and not acting consciously. And when people are reactive, then it explodes. And so a lot of the times what we also work with is actually helping people noticing what is going on when I'm moving into reactive, and how can I work with my own reactiveness, and how can I maybe be transparent about, this is my reaction. It's not what I want to say to you, but it is my reaction. This is the reaction I'm having. Rather than just playing it out and kind of throwing it on other people, which just becomes so common when people are pushed and stressed.
Mm-hmm. So then I kind of assume that you really spend quite some time in supporting organization. It's not just a short-term thing. I suspect it's really over months and years, maybe.
Yeah, yes. It's both on individuals and with organizations. It's usually, it's long relationships, and it's not a quick fix almost ever. Like sometimes things can happen quite quickly. And it is also like one of the things that I maybe wanted to bring in here, especially for a community like this, is the being able to being the bridge in between the company language and their reality, and then kind of the work that we do. Because if we come in with the kind of language that we talk here, they would be like, go away. You know, you can as well just go home. We need to do our business. And it's kind of like, how is there really the understanding that yes, they do need to continue doing their business, and how can we translate the things that we're doing into, you know, looking at the impact, and how quickly we can see some impact, which isn't, that is a big challenge, because as you say, it's like when we actually come into a relationship that we will work for several years, we will over time see quite big impact, but it's not in a few months, there isn't necessarily much that is seen, but in half a year or 1 year, the impact is usually already quite visible. So the whole idea of just coming in and doing one thing can be a nice thing, but that is not really making kind of a sustainable change.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, often you have this, I think this old way of measuring success, where it's almost always only about the numbers, the money. And I guess we also need to really build awareness in a different understanding what is really success. And maybe you can share a bit about that also.
Yeah, that's not an easy way sometimes. And this is where I'd like to maybe jump to my previous work with just being a CEO and kind of for giving me the allowance to do the things the way I wanted to do them. I needed to show some results. And when I showed some results, or we as a company, when we showed the results, then we were given the freedom of actually doing the things the way we want to. And this understanding is like the understanding of whether we're looking at self-organizing organizations that want to make the shift. There's often the change curve where they're, for a moment, they're, things, the performance may go down and then it's going to go up again and we're going to see kind of better results in whatever the measure is. But the allowance for something that it actually we would in money or result that would go down for a while, there is not many companies that are open for that. And our experience is that we can't really. Maybe we could, and that would be a different approach and working with different sorts of companies. But the companies we've been working with, at least we can't come in and kind of demand that, you know, you need to look at another way of success. I believe more in the way that you can put another layer. So gradually as we work together, there's going to be more understanding and about like, or thinking about, not maybe understanding, but thinking about success. And there might be some new measures put in. But I believe we're still quite far away from, especially in the corporate world, from taking out the measures of profit or even growth, which is really sad because especially when we look at the growth thing, it's like, well, we can't grow and grow and grow like all the time. We just are using so much of our resources.
What just some people say, we can grow, but also really vertical, like in depth.
Yeah, but I mean, when we're looking at money if we're looking at revenue, yes. And if we only want to grow the revenue and like more and more and more, which is like the curves look horrible. But we can grow as people, we can grow in sustainable ways. And I love how, for example, is it New Zealand where the new prime minister have put in measures of success in well-being, which is something I believe the shift is coming through actually putting in measures like that beside the other measures. So I have a hard time seeing it just flip around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it happens gradually and kind of seeing the link of well-being. Like if we were talk on energetic terms, I think money is just energy as everything else in some ways, looking from that perspective. But this is a big, big topic. That I love exploring, but maybe it's not for this organization or this conversation, sorry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I mean, many people are kind of on a smaller or bigger level are really dealing with this issue because some maybe there are people now listening to us which have our organization on their own and they are curious to really shift it because they sense I want to kind of contribute to a more life-giving world. I want to have different services or products. but then also on an individual level. I mean, some people, they maybe are in jobs where they mainly do them because they get the money, but the joy is missing, or this feeling of I really fulfill my purpose. And also on an individual level, I mean, we need money to pay rent, to buy food, to whatever we need. But I liked really much this idea, kind of not letting it drop totally, because it's nothing bad about it, but maybe kind of opening our perspective and include different ways of what really matters, what nourishes us, what fulfills us, or what supports our well-being individually and also as a society and as in the world. So it's, for me, as I see it, it's really an expansion process.
Mm. Yeah, it is, and I know companies for which I'm actually also working in some non-executive boards, and these are smaller companies, entrepreneurs that are doing well business-like, but they also have in the very center, they have the well-being of people, and so I do believe that this is kind of the way, this is the way forward. And this is where I think I come back to kind of the playground in which I've chosen to work, because I also know, I mean, there might be some very extreme communities in the world where there's no money and there is a kind of, it's just self-sustained and really living out of nature. And I completely, you know, appreciate that, and it's wonderful and to see it. And I have been intrigued by those kind of these kinds of communities, whereas now I felt that where I want to make the impact is in quite close to those, like the big corporations, that the shift is just going to be take a lot more time than it will where there's entrepreneurs coming up, and they can kind of start from zero because they don't have all the baggage, and you could look at the owner structure of, because it so much has to do with what is the owner kind of wanting from the company, and if the owner structure is made in a way that really has the values of the human parts, and then also having a healthy business, but that healthiness includes both people and the community around the people. So it's not only the employees, it's also their families. It's the community in which the company is in. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As Steve Farrell from Humanity's team put it so beautifully, the corporate world basically has now the most impact into our lives on a big scale. So it's kind of, he said, we better look at bringing more consciousness into the corporate world. So I'm so happy that you chose to support that process. And I just wonder if you also kind of share information in kind of teaching people which would be interested in work, what you offer, Heidi?
So what kind of work we do?
Yes.
Yeah, so we do have a kind of a center or heart of the work, which is based in Amara's co-founder, Bill Thorberg. It has to do with both. So one part is the stages of human development, of adult development, and how we move from the more conventional, like kind of the normative way of thinking and being, to more post-conventional, like more expansive way of both thinking and acting in the world. So that's kind of one part of it, which we often don't even articulate. It's just there. It kind of, that's kind of a little bit of a map in some ways. And then the actual practice is something we call action inquiry, or Bill calls it action inquiry, and we have turned it into inquiry in action, which is really the capacity of being, like, inquire and act at the same time. And so often we kind of, in organizations, there are often more action and less inquiry. And inquiry, like, action is appreciated and it's valued. And like, if you do something, that's, yeah, it's wonderful, you get results. Whereas then the inquiry that allows for more expansive thinking, for more perspectives, and for more space, that has a lot less time and a lot less value. And a lot of the times it's something that people are not very familiar with. Whereas then in more conscious communities, I see a lot more inquiry than action. And what we work with is this whole, it's a skill, it's a way of life, it's different kind of tools in how we can actually act in the way in which we want to act. So, and we often think, well, we do, but actually we don't. And if we're really true to ourselves and being able to inquire both from myself, so the first person of like, what is really going on with me, and use that also as an information point that maybe my body is actually so wise that it can give me information about the situations I'm in, and paying attention to it and noticing it. How we breathe, what the senses and what we take in, kind of how we listen, and also being inquire into the second person, into the V space. So what's going on in between me and you, and or in the group, and also at the same time being able to inquire into the third person, or the organization and the world, and being able to kind of have that consciousness at the same time while acting. So that's like, of course we're not doing it all the time, but it's kind of the center and the way of life, the way in which we're taking things forward, and helping people to master this skill. And it is one of the, we often say that it's, or it is statistically the only method that actually has proven to be generating transformation on both individual and organizational level. That of course doesn't mean it's the only one, because just because it has the statistical proof, it doesn't mean it's the only one, but it's the one that actually has been researched to bring results. So that's the core of what we do. And it is very hard sometimes to understand what action inquiry is, or inquiry in action. And that's why I actually brought the book that we just wrote, which is, we wrote the book Street Smart Awareness and Inquiry in Action, by gathering 18 people from around the world who like to ask them, so what are the practices that you do in your life, and where do they come from, and what do you do, and how can you apply it? Because I believe a lot of the times it actually comes through our practices and how we make new habits. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the big part of our work. And then we also bring in a lot of different concepts and theories and ideas when needed. But that's kind of not, it's more in the back pocket than... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful. And I mean, there came just this question, when you would kind of work in a company to share all of what you just so beautifully explained to us, if you would say in average a person would be 8 hours a day in this company, in kind of average, what would you say, how much time would be needed to take care of really supporting people in their development? So, because I guess as a company, you would be willing, you need to be willing to give a certain amount of time to this process.
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question. You mean how much time per day or per year?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not really something you would do daily with everyone, so it's a bit difficult. But in a percentage kind of that people could get a bit of an idea how much time and resource and willingness investment is needed in order to be able to grow into this maturity to really have different actions.
Right. Well, to start with, I think the number one is actually the willingness and the openness. And so in some level of courageousness to actually try new things. And so that's kind of the key. Without that, it doesn't matter really how much time is used. And then the second part is, well, I mean, there isn't, of course, an answer to that question because there are so many ways in which people can do that. But if I, let's say I'd be leading an organization, and what would I think is realistic and still bringing results for people would be maybe that one day per month and something like, you know, half an hour per day. Mm-hmm. And so because it's all of this is so individual, we all come with such a different background and we have so different things in our backpack and with us that we're bringing, that what is good for me isn't good for you. But I, just as an example, there's one person we've been working with who tells me he has a coach, and I think he probably meets the coach for an hour every 3 weeks or so. But he has taken on to actually journal 10 minutes every day. And this is an input of 10 minutes each day. It has like a huge impact on like, this is what he tells me. And I mean, journaling is one of the practices we have in our book. And one of the practices we always help people with, we always do that when we work with a group, actually, journaling. And so that's just an example. Or another thing, which is the practice of Amara when we have internal meetings, is we start every meeting with 3 minutes of silence. And these 3 minutes is to actually let people arrive, to being conscious of what's really going on with me. And after that silence, we do a check-in and a check-out at the end of the meeting. So this, if we're looking at time-wise, this is probably something like, from a 1.5 hour meeting, it's probably something like 10 minutes that we're using just for me to become present, for me to share with you where I am. And so if I'm telling, I've had a horrible morning with one of my boys and me having a fight or something like this, it's better for me to share that with you in the beginning of the meeting rather than me bringing it in and you wondering like, what's going on with her? And so I actually think it's more effective. So this is where the shift from efficiency to effectiveness of doing the important things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's kind of answering.
Yeah, totally. Because what I get is kind of how I would say it's not really a lot of time to invest to build a different context in which you meet, in which your conversation and your meeting would be. But it's also about this consistency where you're really interested to contribute on a daily basis for 10 minutes or so, where you invest in your deepening and your maturing kind of. And so those two parameters I take out as an answer of this. I mean, in a way, it was a bit a silly question, I know, but this gives us an idea in kind of which directions we can put our awareness.
And there's maybe one other thing that I'd like to add, which is when we're thinking about development, so I might have an inquiry question, which is it's not a question that I answer yes or no to, or it's very easy and you know, I talk about it to actually find the answer, but it's a question for me to really explore some topic. And I might be with an inquiry question for, you know, 3 months with the same inquiry question and coming into it from different perspectives. But if that's a big thing that is actually holding me back from my development, coming just back to it and coming back to it and coming back to it and exploring it in also through the different lenses of the experiences that I have, then, you know, this is another way of doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as you asked, like how much time do we need to develop? So as in order to develop, so the stages, the 7 stages of or action logics, they like on average is said it's about 2 years from one action logic to the next. And so this is not, it's not a quick fix in any way. It's a lifelong journey.
Thank you, Heidi. I really like the different experiences, perspectives, knowledge you brought into our conversation. And I just want to give you the opportunity at the end of our time together, if there is anything which kind of I haven't asked you or what you think is really so precious for you to share. So I want to just give you this opportunity.
Well, and then I might be a little bit repetitive as I come in with this, but the things that are actually intriguing me and I find quite important at this moment in life, I mean, it might change in a year or so, but so one part is actually this whole part of bringing in more feminine power and more women into leadership positions. And I don't mean women that act like men, but actually women that have stepped into the feminine power and integrated both the masculine and the feminine in their being. And I find this, just as we're looking at climate change and the changes that we need also in the political world, especially, this is where it's not the only answer and it's not this simplistic, but we have a lot more capable women in this world who could do a lot more, and actually make the kind of change that I believe we are to have a place where we look 7 generations ahead when we make our decisions, mm-hmm. and not just for the next quarter, like the next quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we actually create a place where our grandchildren and their children are able to have clean air and clean water and be safe? And so this is, I think, one of the big questions of this time. And then the other part is this of us often being so, and I mean, I know I relate to this myself, of very easily being judgmental or critical or arrogant, either to just in general or in our work to people that are not as a, you know, are not at an evolved stage, for example. Whereas at the end of the day, as much as we are going towards helping people develop in this kind of human development stages and being able to make a better sustainable world, or if whether that's better or not, I think we could have so much more kindness and humbleness and just appreciate people where they are at and see kind of the beauty in people and the small things And that's something that I think just that in itself would make such a big difference to the way in which we interact with each other in every place and especially in organizations.
Well, that's so powerful what you just shared right now. And I received the image of a family with children in different ages, and you would just in the family just acknowledge and really receive the different qualities the children would bring in their different states of development, and you wouldn't judge them because they can't do a 2-year-old can do anything like a 15-year-old or so kind of. And with this female quality of thinking, more as if we would be just in a big family with people in different ages, in different states of development. And what also kind of came to my mind was that we as women maybe also really following our love, what we love and what we would like to see growing in the world, and just kind of contribute to what we like. I'm not focusing so much in what we don't like, and we don't need to fight against it. But if we put our awareness to what we really love, I mean, like in a garden, you water the plants you want to see grow. So there were just these images coming in while I was sitting.
Yes, and I know we're about to finish, but there's one thing I want to pick up on, and I think that's my, for myself personally, a big learning of exactly what you're talking about with children. So when becoming more familiar with how we do develop, I think we put so much, collectively and as a norm, so much expectations on children and things that they just are not capable of. Sometimes a fight is the best thing they can do because they need to create that identity. And it's like, it's hard to bear, but it's not a bad thing that they look out for their own boundaries. And so this has been my personal lesson about, well, sometimes we do expect way too much of children, whereas there are certain things in the development we need to go through, and if we just only understood to be there and support and love them rather than be critical at those times, that would make a big difference.
Thank you so much, Heidi, for taking the time, being part of this Conscious Evolution Summit, sharing about your work. I will also share the link to this book. I just guessed that some people might be interested in diving deeper into parts of what you've shared. And I send you much love up to the north, to Helsinki. And if you have anything in the future you would like to share, I'm really very happy to do this also kind of further after the summit, because I will inform the audience of kind of inspiring events and wisdom also in the future. And I also want to thank you in the audience taking this time, being with us, listening to Heidi's wisdom about leadership in organizations and creating a shift in our world. So I thank you so much. And if you like what you see in our conversations, I'm also happy if you tell your friends about it, so that the number of conscious, aware, and also, as you said, bringing really love in action into our life can grow really globally. So I thank you for doing that.
Thank you.